From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made 1 week ago with the release of a new report from the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. The short description is that we're rapidly moving into dangerous climate territory, and it's worse than many want to believe. But here are some specifics. The Paris Climate Agreement of 2015 set a target of no more than 2 degrees Celsius of global warming above pre-industrial temperatures, but also an aspirational target of no more than 1.5 degrees Celsius of warming. The UN asked the IPCC to investigate the difference between 1.5 and 2 degrees of warming and to offer a special report on what it would take to achieve the 1.5 degree limit. Oh, they also want to know, what are the consequences if we miss it? Now think of it this way. Imagine you ask someone to investigate what will happen to your body if you eat 10 boxes of Twinkies in a single day. They come back and tell you later that day, this is going to be bad, catastrophic health failure. But by the way, you've been cramming Twinkies down your throat while they were investigating, and now you've already eaten 8.5 boxes. Can you stop yourself? The IPCC says we've already burned through much of our 1.5 degree budget, so to speak. We could pass that warming threshold within the next decade. We simply must cut carbon pollution as much as possible, as quickly as possible. Now, in response to this news, researchers like Eric Holthaus have announced their intention to change their own habits. Holthaus says, for example, he's never going to fly in an airplane again. That's just for starters. Dealing with this will take policy change, of course. There are a list of 100 solutions as part of Project Drawdown. Have you heard of it? We're going to get specific this hour as we talk about the kinds of changes that could produce a meaningful impact. And as gloomy as all of this sounds, I found myself rather energized after reading more about the proposals for change. My guests this hour include a local organizer for Project Drawdown, Sue Starpoli is here. Sue, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Evan.
Also with us is Al Hibner, who's a retired science teacher on multiple levels, and he's with the Citizens Climate Lobby and Project Drawdown. Al, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
And back from the Rochester People's Climate Coalition is Sue Hughes-Smith. Sue, welcome to you as well.
Thanks, Evan. Good to see you.
A brief hello from Gene Fisher. Our colleague from down the hall is here to interrupt just briefly to say hello. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. And you know, it is the first day of our October membership campaign, but this is also new member Monday here at WXXI and WRUR and WEOS. So we have a great opportunity for you if you've never gotten around to making a pledge to support the programming, programs like this on your public radio station. Your first-time pledge at any level just for today will be matched dollar for dollar thanks to the new Member Challenge Fund. So when you go to the phone and dial 585-454-6300 or go online to your local station's website, WXXI.org, WRUR.org, WEOS.org, and make that gift, it will automatically be doubled. And since we're thinking about ways that we can make our planet better, healthier, safer, I want to suggest the $5 a month level. This is a level that's important to me because you can ask for the station tote bag with the logo, Go Public or Finger Lakes Public Radio or different radio. And I use these tote bags when I go shopping to cut down on the use of paper and plastic and all of that stuff that is really goes to waste just putting my groceries in it. So if that sounds good to you, $5 a month, automatically doubled thanks to the new member challenge. Just call 585-454-6300 or make your gift online at your public radio station's website, WXXI.org, WEOS.org, or WRUR.org. And thank you.
I like how you brought it back to the theme of this hour, too, Gene. Always thinking about that. That's our colleague, Gene Fisher. All right, so there's a lot to discuss this hour. I already have emails from listeners with specific questions on what they can do or perhaps what policy changes are in sight. But let me just start with the response to the IPCC and their own report. Sue Hughes-Smith, I'll start with you. This was, I think, a jolt for a lot of people. Maybe not in the scientific community. They thought, we've been trying to tell you this, but the headlines were pretty dark. And we are going to try to get away from the gloominess this hour and look ahead. But I took it as a jolt last week. What did you think?
Well, I think you kind of nailed it. Those of us who have been following the science, we're already aware. But still, it was its own kind of depressing to hear the official news. But you either use that to galvanize yourself and to move forward, or you sit and stew. So, you know, there's lots to do, and there's lots of great opportunities to engage right here in Rochester.
Okay. Al, how did you take the news of the report?
I agree completely with what Sue just said. This was galvanizing. This really makes us double down and work just that much harder to try to implement some of the solutions we'll be talking about today.
Sue Starpoli, how did you take the news?
Ditto. It motivated me even more. It's like, oh my gosh, we have got to really double up even on this work. So I'm thrilled that we can focus on solutions and what is possible, because I don't want to live in that depressing state of powerlessness.
There's an event happening tonight. We're going to talk about that in just a second. I want to tell you the basis for it, because if you haven't heard about drawdown, the concept of drawdown or project drawdown, I'll tell you a little bit about that, and then our guests will be able to discuss more of it. Now, drawdown is defined by, really, the guy behind it is an environmentalist, he's an activist, an entrepreneur. His name is Paul Hawken, and he defines the concept of drawdown as the following. It's the point in time when the concentration of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere begins to decline on a year-to-year basis. Not a slowing down of the warming or the contribution of gases, but a decline. And this is how he decided to put this concept together. He says Project Drawdown is a comprehensive plan proposed to reverse global warming. Reverse it, not slow it. He gathered a qualified and diverse group of researchers from around the world to identify, research, and model the 100 most substantive existing solutions to address climate change. What was uncovered is a path forward that can roll back global greenhouse gas emissions within 30 years. The research revealed that humanity does have the means and the techniques at hand now, and nothing new needs to be invented to do this. So the key here is that this isn't grandiose. This isn't if you invent some sort of Rube Goldberg machine, we can figure this all out. It's everything within reach now if we decide to do it and you can reverse it. I'd like to listen to some of what Paul Hawken had to say, because when he talks about climate proposals, if you Google, as he says, top proposals to deal with climate change, he was not very impressed for a long time. A lot of it was how to slow down warming, how to slow it down, you know, how to gradually reduce. Here's his response to this notion of, well, if we just slow down warming, listen.
If you're going the wrong way, you have to stop. You just can't slow down and say, now we're not going the wrong way. You still are going the wrong way. And that's why I say right now the proposals around addressing global warming are like Thelma and Louise in slow motion. We're just going right over the cliff, but we want to go slower. And that is not an inspirational goal for humankind. The only goal that makes sense for humanity is to reverse global warming. It's to stop, turn around, and go the other way. And I don't believe that you can achieve something if you don't name what it is you want to achieve. And naming the goal of reversal actually opens up possibility. There's this idea that somehow if we make our goals too big, you know, that it's too hard. It's the other way around. The bigger you make your goal, the more spaciousness there is in your mind, and creativity, imagination soars within a big goal. It doesn't get very far when the goal is really tiny and minuscule.
So that's Paul Hawken. His book is Drawdown. It's a New York Times bestseller, and you really ought to check it out. The website, I think, is drawdown.org, if I'm remembering correctly. And Sue, what's going on tonight?
Tonight, one of the things that our organization, the Pachamama Alliance, is doing is taking this book and trying to make it accessible to ordinary people in local communities. So what we are having tonight is an introduction to, the title actually is Reversing Global Warming, Introduction to Drawdown. And it's an opportunity for people to come together to hear more from Paul Hawken, and that was a clip of what we'd be hearing tonight. But connecting with others, exploring what the solutions are, noticing which of the solutions you have any interest in or connection with, and particularly what we can be doing at the local level. One of the things, the reasons I'm so passionate is we can't wait for Washington. We need to be focusing on what we can do here in our Rochester community. So tonight is a place for people to come, learn, and then from that we will be offering a four-session course called Drawdown Solutions Getting into Action. That's also going to be at Metro Justice starting on the 29th. So if people come tonight, find they really want to work with others to get into concrete action locally around solutions, they can come to this four-session course.
I want our listeners to think in your mind, and I'm going to reveal the answer in a minute. What do you think is number one on the solution list? What do you think is number two? I find it fascinating. So if you go to drawdown.org, they have the list in a nice, easy chart, the top 100 solutions. And it's based and it's ranked on the possible benefit to the environment, essentially, and the possible magnitude of the change here. So what do you think number one would be? I will tell you in a moment. I do want to offer a couple of things here in regards to what I think also has to change, and I'll get our guests' thoughts on this. You're going to have family members and you're going to have friends and say it's too big a problem, or passively they're going to say, look, we'll innovate our way out of it eventually. We always do if it's really a problem. Or they might say it's not even real. We're still dealing with some of that. So I want to listen to a couple of clips, one from just this morning on Fox News. So this clip comes from Fox and Friends. Brian Kilmeade is talking about the Leslie Stahl interview on 60 Minutes with President Trump that aired last night. And Kilmeade was complaining about the fact that Leslie Stahl really seems to think climate change is real.
Very first question is she really believes in global warming, and that's fine. And climate and man's role in climate change, and that's okay. But I don't think you should bring your point of view. She was trying to win over the president with her point of view.
Talking about what scientists. Yeah, but
about scientists that, yeah, well, scientists was in it. Scientists,
right.
There's other scientists who say it. Something's going on out there. The role of man has not been unveiled to a way in which the president accepts. Same way Marco right. Rubio answered very similarly in similar questions.
All right, so number one on my list of proposed solutions is just stop watching cable news forever. And I mean all cable news, all of it. I mean, mankind invents a lot of great things, and then sometimes mankind invents something and it's a mistake, and that's cable news. Just stop it and evangelize to your family. It's hurting you. Don't watch cable news anymore. You don't need it. It's bad for your brain. So that's my idea. We'll see what our guests think in just a moment. The other clip I want you to listen to is, so the Republican who's running for governor in Pennsylvania, Scott Wagner was at a town hall event in which a young woman in the audience, I say young woman, I think she's 18, grabbed the microphone and asked about a lot of money that Wagner has taken from the fossil fuel industry. Let's listen to her question and let's listen to how he responds to her.
How are you?
Good, thanks. How are you?
I'm great.
Awesome. My name is Rose. I'm 18, and I'm really concerned about the future of our country. Two-thirds of Pennsylvanians think that climate change is an issue that needs to be addressed, but you have said that climate change is a result of people's body heat and are refusing to take action on the issue. Does this have anything to do with the $200,000 that you have taken from the fossil fuel industry?
Rose, you know what, I appreciate you being here, and you're 18 years old, and you know, you're a little young and naive. Let's talk about something else. Listen, Rose, and I appreciate you. But are we here to elect the governor, or are we here to elect the scientist?
Boy, Sue Starpoli, you just gasped. You hadn't heard that clip, had you?
No, I hadn't. It's appalling. At many, many levels.
First of all, don't call someone asking a legitimate question young and naive. Second of all, it's a fair question, and you don't have to dodge it. If you don't want to answer it, just say, I refuse to answer it. But third of all, if this is your party, if this was a Democrat, Democrats, you can't stand for this. If this is a Republican, in this case it is, you cannot stand for this. This is not good enough anymore. So those are my proposed solutions. Call it out, even if it's your own party. Stop watching cable news with some rare exceptions. There are some great journalists in cable news, but for the most part, it's bad for your brain. And Sue Hugh Smith, how do you like my proposed solutions?
I love your proposed solutions, actually. I was in class this morning having a similar preach session about the need to call the people who you have in office and that they need to hear, especially if you're a Republican in a Republican district, they really need to hear from you. But Democrats in Democratic districts need to hear from you as well. And they need to understand that you're going to vote and then you need to vote. You know, I mean, we have to confront the fact that in primary elections, we have about 10% of the population in this country voting. If we're not going to vote, we're going to get extremists, because that's those of us who do show up to vote tend to be on the edge of our parties, and the people running reflect that. So we have to show up to vote every time there's a chance to vote, and we have to get money out of politics. But we can't wait for those two things to happen to address climate change. So I would hate for people listening today to think, well, we can't do anything because we're not going to get federal action anytime soon. there's a whole lot more that we can do and that we have to do.
And I think this can be viewed as sort of a partisan comment. It's not. I think it's, in some ways, it's even more nuanced and difficult for Democrats, because when you look at the Paris Climate Agreement, to some degree, the political left celebrated that work. And most scientists will tell you, it was not good enough. Yeah,
it wasn't
courageous enough.
That's exactly right.
And so all the backpatting you're doing is not actually helping solve the problem.
Exactly.
So it is tough, but it has to be called out. Al, how do you feel about what you heard?
Well, I've come to Project Drawdown from my participation with Citizens Climate Lobby, and we're taking a very nonpartisan approach.
Absolutely.
We are working with Republicans and Democrats, so I would kind of add to the nuance of what you said. We now have 90 members of Congress, 45 Republicans and 45 Democrats, who are in the House Climate Solutions Caucus. This is our hope. We believe that federal legislation will come out of this caucus to put a price on carbon. So we're doing everything we can to leverage political will to get our members of Congress to put forth legislation to put a price on carbon. And this will actually energize and supercharge everything that's being proposed in Project Drawdown. So it's a good 1-2 punch.
All right. So listeners, if you've got thoughts that you want to share, you can email the program connections@wxxi.org. I've already got some emails from you. I've got some predictions on what number one on the drawdown list is going to be. We'll get to that in just a second. You can call the program. It's toll-free, 844-295-TALK. Toll-free, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Tonight, starting at 7 p.m. at Metro Justice on East Main Street, is a New York drawdown event where you can learn more about this. Number one on the list, Sue Starpoli on the list of drawdown. And again, there's 100 possible solutions here. But number one, refrigerant management. And I'm going to read from this. I found this fascinating. Every refrigerator and air conditioner contains chemical refrigerants that absorb and release heat to enable chilling. Refrigerants, specifically CFCs and HCFCs, were once culprits in depleting the ozone layer. Thanks to the 1987 Montreal Protocol, they have been phased out. HFCs, the primary replacement, spare the ozone layer, but they have 1,000 to 9,000 times greater capacity to warm the atmosphere than even carbon dioxide. In October of 2016, officials from more than 170 countries met to negotiate a deal to address this problem. Through an amendment to the Montreal Protocol, the world's going to phase out HFCs too, starting with high-income countries in 2019, and then some low-income countries in 2024, others in 2028. Substitutes are already on the market, including natural refrigerants such as propane and ammonium. So part of what they're calling on is that's good, but it should be even more swift than that. It wasn't my choice for number one. So were you surprised when you saw that list for the first time?
Yeah, it was very interesting as we look at the list. And even for Paul Hawken, when he said the 200 scientists were working on this and they were stunned by the results that came out. And I think one of the things I want to emphasize on that is, you know, they came up with 80 top solutions and then 20 coming attractions, which were too new to actually scale up. Mm-hmm. But the thing that he emphasizes is of those 80 really live, workable solutions, there's something for everybody. He said, it's, you know, people tend to think, well, I should be working on the top one or two or the top 10. But he said, number 69 might be where your passion is.
Yep.
So that we need to be really looking at them all. And that's part of what we try to do with people, particularly when we get to the course, is to help people identify that, the ones that really resonate for them. But yeah, refrigerant management was certainly very prosaic, and it wasn't, you know, it was just kind of struck us all. But it makes sense when you think about the gases being emitted.
The air conditioning for your home, the way we cool ourselves down on hot days, et cetera. Melinda writes to the program and says, number one has to be stop eating animals and animal products. It's number four. Yep. A plant-rich diet is number four on the list. So let me go over the top 10, and I'll let our guests weigh in on what they're seeing here. So refrigerant management, number one. Number two, onshore wind turbines. So electricity generation via wind is number two on the international list. Number three, reducing food waste. Number four, eating a plant-rich diet. Number five, tropical forests. Number six, this is a fascinating one, educating girls. We'll get back to that in a second. Number seven, family planning. Number eight, solar farms. Number 9, silvopasture. See, are we learning new things? That's a term that I hadn't heard before. And number 10, rooftop solar. So different than solar farms. Al, what stands out to you there?
One of the things that we've talked about in Project Drawdown is the combination of number 6 and number 7, educating girls and family planning. If you put those two together, you actually generate the number one solution for solving climate change. And that is just staggering. As women are more educated and families have more assets, more money, more resources, they tend to have smaller families. It's just happening throughout the developed world, and this really puts less pressure on our climate.
Now, on the scientific side, there are some skeptics or even cynics who are going to say, wait, I thought the whole population bomb was a myth. I thought we had dealt with that decades ago. Does this sort of split the difference? How do you view the issue of population?
I don't see how I think we are past the carrying capacity of our current Earth at 10 billion plus people, as we approach 10 billion plus people. It's just not sustainable. So I really think that that's something that has to be taken into consideration.
Okay. Sue Hugh Smith, what stands out to you here?
Well, I guess a couple things. At the Righteous People's Climate Coalition, we focus on averages and not on individual as individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Because specifically, if someone is really, it's really important to them to have a large family, and therefore they say, well, I can't do anything else because I really care about that issue, or they really don't want to give up meat, and then if that alienates them from taking any action, that would be a tremendous loss. Because there's many, many things anybody as an individual can do. And what we need are societal averages to change. And so I would submit on the case of like population, the U.S. fertility rate is below replacement level, but our consumption levels continue to skyrocket, right? So just addressing fertility in the absence of addressing consumption doesn't solve anything. It has to be a holistic view. It is a systemic issue. So to be careful of that, I guess, would be my input.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And certainly when we see wind, solar in two different ways in the top 10, wind and solar are not just on the list of top 100, they're in the top 10. They are right there, mm-hmm. as within reach. How do you see policy moving in that direction? And are you an optimist, what you've seen? Mm-hmm. Are you frustrated that, you know, there has been some gains, but it's still sort of being mitigated by all, you know, sort of reinvesting in coal and all kinds of other things?
Yeah, I don't know that I would ever describe myself as an optimist, but I have to get up every day with hope. Because otherwise I wouldn't get up. And the thing is we have to switch our renewables. Our energy system has to go to renewable. There's no way around that. And we're going to have to use solar, and we're going to have to use a whole lot of wind. And that, I hope you do just a show on onshore wind in this area at some point. We have to do that. Our survival as a species depends upon it. We can't get around it. So the coalition is really turning our attention this next year to kind of upping the, I guess, the perception of what needs to happen. We have to go all electric. Like all of us as individuals, all of us as businesses, all of us as communities, everything we do has to be electrified, because you can only use renewables in that way, right? And we can use renewables to generate all of our electricity in a clean way. And so all of our personal behaviors need to shift to electricity. And I think once people understand that, it helps them to see the direction that we need to move. The state of New York could do more to help. They're looking at the electricity sector, and we could, if we follow their plans, we'll make very slow incremental change that doesn't match with the science. But we have no actual plan as a state to achieve a 100% a renewably powered transportation system. We don't have a plan to get all of our buildings heat pumps, and whether they're ground source or air source heat pumps, and retrofit them. All those things have to happen. So yeah, we need much more ambitious plans and better policy. And there is one proposed at the state level called the Climate and Community Protection Act. And it has passed the assembly, I think three years now in a row. But we need both branches. Both the Senate needs to pass it, and we need the governor to sign it.
Drawdown.org is where you can find the full list of some of the proposed solutions that we're talking about this hour. And I think as Sue Hugh Smith talks about these various proposals, And the way that it has to be a societal average change, I still think there has to be a little bit more of a willingness to be YIMBYs instead of NIMBYs. There's another term I had not heard until recently. Mm-hmm. Yes in my backyard. Mm-hmm. You know, if there's a proposal for a project, are you willing to say yes? And I like that term, YIMBY. I had not heard that until recently, but I'd like to consider myself a YIMBY. Monica writes to us and just wants to know a little bit more about educating girls, which is number 6 on the list. And again, as Al said, number 6 is educating girls, number 7, family planning. Let me just read from Paul Hawkins' website directly on why educating girls is number 6 on the top 100 list of solutions on reversing climate change. Quote, education lays a foundation for vibrant lives for girls and women, for their families and their communities. It also is one of the most powerful levers available for avoiding emissions by curbing population growth. Women with more years of education have fewer and healthier children and actively manage their reproductive health. Educated girls realize higher wages and greater upward mobility, contributing to economic growth. Their rates of maternal mortality drop, as do mortality rates of their babies. They are less likely to marry as children or against their will. They have lower incidence of HIV/AIDS and malaria. Their agricultural plots are more productive and their families better nourished. Education also shores up resilience and equips girls and women to face the impacts of climate change. They can be more effective stewards of food, soil, trees, and water, even as nature's cycle change. Now, they have greater capacity to cope with shocks from natural disasters and extreme weather events. So that is from their list number 6 there, educating girls and family planning. And what I want to do is get our only break of the hour. We're going to come back and we'll go through more of the list. I've got a lot more to tell you about what's happening with drawdown events. So we've told you about the one tonight. There's more coming up that Sue Starpoli can tell you about. And we'll take your calls and emails as we discuss these solutions, not just the gloom, but the optimistic opportunity that we have to stop and reverse warming. Let's take that break right now in Connections. Coming up in our second hour, we talked to photojournalist Max Schulte of the Democrat and Chronicle, who was closer than he has ever been to a gunfight last week, an active shooting situation in which he captured remarkable pictures and video. We're going to talk about that moment, what it was like for him in his career, why he puts himself at risk, and why police officers run toward the danger in moments like that, following their training. We'll talk about it next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. The IPCC report on climate change indicates that we are well on our way to 1.5 degrees Celsius of warming above pre-industrial levels, and that is essentially considered a tipping point. So it's not just a case of, well, let's start now and, you know, we can slow it down. Within the next decade, we're going to get there if we don't make dramatic changes. And it's going to require quite a lot. Well, drawdown.org is the site of 80 concrete solutions now and 20 sort of looking ahead, aspirational ideas here. I read 1 to 10. I'll read 11 to 20 now, and then I'll take some of your feedback here. Number 11, regenerative agriculture. Number 12, temperate forests. Number 13, peatlands. Again, I've got to do a lot of reading and research to understand some of this. It's awesome. Number 14, tropical staple trees. Number 15, afforestation. Number 16, conservation agriculture. Number 17, tree intercropping. Number 18, geothermal. Number 19, managed grazing. And number 20, nuclear. So there's the list of 11 to 20 as we're working our way down the list there. Let me go ahead and read an email, which we will kick to our guests then in just a second for their thoughts. Alex writes to us and says, an angle I don't often see covered outside of left Twitter circles is the idea that we need to change more than just personal habits or have corporations make minor changes in sustainability, but a huge paradigm shift away from democratic capitalism entirely. Political platforms can no longer stick with simple green energy initiatives, but real solutions toward carbon sequestration and reducing consumption of resources. So my question for your panel is, what solutions, no matter how grand in scale, to climate change would you like to see real political motivation behind right now? That is from Alex. Al.
I have got to say that nonpartisan, putting a price on carbon, basically going there and trusting in the market forces, revenue neutrality, returning any of the fees to American households to offset the costs of increasing energy due to a carbon price. That is the only policy that we can think of in Citizens Climate Lobby related to drawdown that will actually generate the market changes that are going to be needed at the speed and pace and harnessing the technology to create a green energy economy. So it really, in order to engage Republicans and Democrats together in a dialogue, it's going to have to really focus on revenue neutrality in our opinion.
Okay. Let me ask Sue Hughes-Smith. I referenced meteorological scientist Eric Holthaus off the top of the program. I follow him on Twitter, and he said in response to IPCC, number one, he's never going to fly in an airplane again. Number two, he's making significant other changes in his own life. And number three, he thinks it's a sign that we must now accept the fact that we cannot solve climate change with capitalism. And that's part of what Alex's email is saying. Mm-hmm. Is that a bridge too far? What do you think?
Oh, well, so there's my heart and there's my head. And, you know, I'm right there with those guys in my heart. I'm very critical of capitalism. I don't see capitalism ending fast enough to solve this problem. And so CCL's plan for a fee and dividend makes a lot of sense. It is bipartisan. A market is a really powerful tool. And if we see the market as a tool rather than as a like religion of sorts, then you might want to use this tool of the market to make changes. And there's nothing like wrong with people creating products or services. Those products and services need to not be damaging to our ecosystem, right? So we have to change the rules of the economic structure in order to better account for external costs. And that's basically our models have failed to do that. So there's no reason you can't change those models and move us in the right direction without throwing out capitalism entirely.
Yeah, it just sounds to me pragmatically, your point here is that it would take massive political will and sort of cultural social change to accept in countries like this one that we're moving away from capitalism.
Right.
And we've got 3 to 10 years, according to IPCC, before we get to 1.5 degrees Celsius of warming. Not enough time.
Right.
You got to work with the tools you have, and you got to use the market.
Right. That's what I think.
Yeah. And people like Bob Inglis, who is a Republican and a former member of the House, believes very strongly in using that tool. So you agree there, Al?
So does ExxonMobil. ExxonMobil is donating $1 million over the next 2 years to promote a national tax on carbon. They're there. They're ready. They actually endorse Citizens Climate Lobby's carbon.
$1 million?
Well,
I mean, that's like me donating like $5.
I understand that. They make that every 2 minutes probably. But that's a start.
Okay.
It's a recognition that we need to do this. And they're planning on the other side what their market reaction to how they're going to produce their fossil fuels and or carbon sequestration of their fossil fuel results in the future.
Okay.
They're already there.
All right. Sue Starpoli, what do you think?
I think that there is a movement, as we've talked about, this being a critical time in our culture where we are moving away from domination, we are moving away from patriarchy toward cooperation, collaboration, looking at the earth as something living and sacred rather than something to be exploited. So I think we're in a time of change, and I think Sue's point, you know, this isn't going to change overnight in terms of getting rid of capitalism, but I love movements like conscious capitalism that are helping people see it within the capitalistic system that there is the triple bottom line, you know, people, planet, and profit, and so on. So I think rather than thinking of getting rid of it, which is, I think, not the goal that I would work toward, I think that it is possible. It's possible for us to keep taking steps and raising consciousness about the triple bottom line thing. Because I think capitalism can work if it has that consciousness.
So Jill writes to us from Hector and says, your guest referred to item number 4, implying that it refers to giving up meat entirely. That's not exactly what it says, but it's commonly the way Americans hear it. More plant foods in the diet means that the smaller demand for animal foods can be provided through pastured local meat and dairy. So shop at your local farmer's market.
Yeah, I'm really glad she made that point because I meant to mentioned that earlier as well. Yeah. Reduce, right? The average American's eating 3/4 of a pound of meat a day. You know, draw that down. Draw that down.
Yeah.
Right? You know.
Well put.
And buy really nice quality meat. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. And that's fair enough. And it does say on the website, Drawdown's website with number 4, eating a plant-rich diet. It doesn't say plant only. It says plant-rich.
Yep.
But it does say that, and this is interesting, if cows were their own nation, they would be the world's third largest emitter of greenhouse gases. Mm-hmm. Just the cows. So mm-hmm. we need to eat fewer of those guys.
Right.
And girls.
Yeah.
That would be definitely fewer. Yeah. And veganism is endorsed on the Drawdown website as a good way to make change. But it doesn't say eliminate meat entirely. So Jill from Hector, thank you very much for that. Alan in Pittsford says, there's a pervasive belief that human activity cannot affect our atmosphere. But here's how I think of it. Everest is 5 miles high. Unless you are a Sherpa, there is not enough oxygen for most humans to survive. 5 miles is about the distance from Rochester Center to the airport. Atmospheres like ours are very rare. We know of no other. Our atmosphere is thin, rare, and delicate. From Alan in Pittsford. You're nodding over there.
Absolutely. It's a great analogy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's you know, that makes me think of one of my favorite writers on climate, Adam Frank from the University of Rochester, the mm-hmm. astrophysicist, who has a book out that you ought to read on the subject. And what he said to me a couple of years ago, he said, there's nowhere else that we know of where you could just go outside under a sky and just breathe and walk around.
Right.
And that's a remarkable gift that we ought to value and protect.
Yep.
So to Alan's point there, well said. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. Next on the phone, Bonnie. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Yeah, hi. Here's a thought. And I agree with everything that's being really said about this whole approach. But here's something that kind of is more, maybe on a little bit smaller scale, but very important. I would think, take some of these things that are being talked about, especially the ones that kind of affect people in their home life more directly, and put them into public policy statements that a larger group in the community, as much as you can, will expect candidates to include. Now, what's curious about this is not just being general, like we're going to do something about climate change, but specifics, as you're indicating in this discussion, and then making it so that there's a kind of a large group of people who are interested in this stuff that will put pressure on candidates to be very specific, and then educate people as to, okay, here's the ongoing education about how serious this is. Now, here's people who will do things about this. So, for instance, on the refrigerator issue, you know, you're going to have a lot of trouble with people who can't afford to just get a new refrigerator or, so make public policy that for subsidized housing, Section 8 and all these, that the national policy be that, you know, that piece be included, and so that people can, you know, who don't have a lot of money, you know, can have a better chance of affording it. So that's just one example. There's a bunch of things you can do in that same example. And I'll just bring up another one. Locally, some of us are fighting the fact that the city wants to add another dollar store in the city. And anybody who knows about dollar stores knows they're not like the best example of recycling, and it's a lot of junk made out of other junk. There's already 18 in the city. So their strategy is to take poor neighborhoods, find vacant places, put the dollar store. We need help with those issues, and that's just one example. So these neighborhood groups, which have been forming quite strongly lately, that they have places to go to get people who are going to say, you know, we're going to have candidates, you know, stand up for this stuff. We're not just going to gibber about it. We're going to have candidates. Right now, that does not happen.
Hmm. Bonnie, thank you. I saw a lot of nodding from Sue Hughes Smith. Go ahead, Sue.
Well, I guess for right here in New York State, getting people to commit to enacting the Climate and Community Protection Act and the one that goes with it, the Climate and Community Investment Act, would go a long way. It would put a price on pollution here in New York, paid by the polluters, and it would remit that money back to communities. And the proposal is for 30% of it to go to climate jobs and infrastructure, 30% to a just transition fund, basically to help disadvantaged communities, low-income communities, 7% to worker and community assurance in places where you may have a power plant that closes that was fossil fuel based. You need to support those folks in the transition. And then 30% rebate for everyone in the state for various things, whether it's through tax credits or transit assistance or utility bill assistance. And so in that way, we could reduce the pollution, protect the communities, grow jobs, reduce health costs, and yeah, ask for those specific items.
Okay, Al?
And I want to add another. I cannot not support the idea of citizen activism enough. Right. Get right. out there, get lobbying, because the lobby means to persuade. It means to persuade your politicians, your candidates on your topics that you want. Go for it. I just cannot support that more. That's what we do in CCL. That's what I would hope that our listeners and speakers would do.
How do they get involved with CCL?
It's easy. We have you can come right to our website. We have meetings on every month, the third Monday of the month at the First Unitarian Church from 7 to 9 p.m. We would love to have additional people join us. And we have a meeting tonight on the 15th, 7 to 9 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church.
Winton, right?
Winton Roads, at 220 South Winton Road.
Is there like a rivalry, like just a burning hatred and just intense division between CCL and RPCC? You just can't get along. You know, you got to choose one or the other. Or you can do both.
Absolutely not. They're both.
Are you kidding me? We're all sitting here.
And Project Drawdown. We're all connected.
We love
connected.
Each other. We love
so,
each other.
So you can be. So Al just told you about the Citizens Climate Lobby. Mm-hmm. Sue Hughes Smith, Rochester People's Climate Coalition. How do people get involved there?
Right. So, you know, we're an umbrella organization. Both of these groups here, Pachamama and CCL, and many, many others are part of the coalition. So get involved with those groups in particular, or email us at at the coalition website if you want to get more engaged on our particular initiatives.
The Rochester People's Climate mm-hmm. Coalition. And Sue Starpoli, you want to let them know how to get involved with Project Drawdown and Pachamama?
One of the best ways to get in touch locally would be to go to our Facebook page, Rochester Drawdown. We've been trying to keep that updated with our vision, with articles about solutions, with events that are coming up. And Pachamama Rochester is another local site. To learn nationally, if you wanted to really look at what these programs that we're offering at the national level that Rochester's been piloting, go to connect.pachamama.org/drawdown. And that would be a good way to learn more about the drawdown initiatives that are happening globally and nationally.
Here's an email from a listener named Mike, who says, "One thing I struggle with is the consumer aspect. I feel like I do my share to limit carbon emissions. I bike to work. I buy carbon offsets. I keep the house at 60 degrees in the winter. I finally insulated my basement this summer, although I struggled with the impact of the leftover insulation in the landfill. I'm considering getting an electric car, although my vehicle is pretty gas efficient and has many years left to go. I don't know that purchasing another vehicle really makes sense. Will I have a bigger impact by driving something with no immediate emissions or by keeping my own and thus keeping one more vehicle off the assembly line? Do your guests have any insights on what I should do?"
That's a tough question.
Yeah, very tough question.
You know, it is true that manufacturing a new car takes a lot more resources and a lot more energy than using what you already have. I know for myself, I kind of have set a goal, 2030, as a goal of achieving, you know, no carbon footprint from my direct energy use. So, you know, we have a very fuel-efficient car, and when it dies, we will replace it with an electric car. That's just the choice that we've made. I don't know what's right for this guy, but...
Okay. Here's a good luck, Mike. And you know what? Just the fact that you're thinking about this and doing all those other things, it's an impressive list. I appreciate that. Thank you, Mike. Bill writes to us and says, "Hello, Evan. Drawdown identifies 10 building solutions, including insulation, heat pumps, and efficient lighting. The average building in Rochester is only about 5% efficient. To see many of the items on that list, people can come out on November 9th and 10th for a free tour of a home that is 90% more efficient than a typical home." That's from Bill, who's a building performance consultant, and I have no idea. Oh, it's a passive home. Is that what it's called?
Yep.
So the passive home is on November 9th and 10th, and the location, by the way, is in Honeyoy Falls at Quaker Meeting House Road in Honeyoy Falls. If you jump on, there's a website for Rochester Passive House, and you can check it out. You can see it if you want to walk through it. worthwhile idea there? Very like that
Absolutely.
Idea?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. One of the things that we try to do in when we get into the drawdown course is for the participants to find out what's already happening locally around these solutions so we can support them, we can collaborate. So I think that's a really important thing. And also the different levels of action people can be engaged with, mm-hmm. you know, as individuals, as families, as working with organizations or other institutions, and then the political piece that mm-hmm. Citizens Climate Lobby and the organizing that we need to do. Right. So there are many ways people can be engaged.
Yeah, and on the buildings, you know, there's simple things. So simple. We could create, in some countries, they have a rating system, kind of like we have Energy Star for appliances. They have that type of rating system for buildings. So you know if you're renting something, if it's very efficient or very inefficient. Implementing something like that, someone might want to take on and work, help the city work towards implementing something simple like that. We could change codes. We could ban new construction from having fossil fuels in order to heat them. There are lots of steps we could take without getting federal legislation to do it.
And I also think related to that is mm-hmm. coming together. You know, so often we think, what can I do individually? Mm-hmm. But it's only, you know, the power of the collective. You know, that's why Citizens Climate Lobby is so powerful, because there is this collective. So I think the more we can come together mm-hmm. to come up with solutions and projects that we can collaborate on and put pressure at every level, even in our businesses or mm-hmm. in other institutions. I know there was one group of people who were concerned about the food waste in their schools. So they as a group approached the school to say, how can we manage this? So I think there's a power as we come together in action.
Coming from CCL, I think one of the things that most attracted me to Project Drawdown was this idea of the four levels, the individual working at the individual. We're hearing callers talk about what they're doing individually. Right. Then there's the larger group, the family group, what we can suggest to our family members. Then there's the community level involvement. And finally, the policy level, the federal government level. We need to operate at all levels. Right. And I think Project Drawdown enhances that. And it's just a remarkable part of the program.
All right, Dave writes to us and says, regarding meat, he says, the latest research indicates that the UK and the US citizens would need to cut beef by 90%, milk by 60%, while increasing things like beans between 4 and 6 times. So Dave is just pointing out that if the admonition is not to necessarily get rid of meat entirely, but to move to a plant-rich diet, mostly plants, eat food, not too much, mostly plants, that it's a dramatic reduction in beef, and that we all could have a point there. Real quick, let me get one more Sue in. It's Sue Day on Connections. Sue in Fairport is the third Sue of the hour. Go ahead, Sue.
Hi. I have an old freezer that I'm not using, and actually it is in still good working order, but it is very old, and I think probably uses it's a guzzler. And I'm wondering if there are any places where I can who will take it to recycle it, basically.
It's a very good question, and I don't know.
I would probably suggest looking at the Eco Park in
the
Rochester.
Monroe County?
Yeah,
Monroe County Eco Park.
And call them to find out what could be done with that, if that's possible.
It's a great point that Al's raising. I think it's Monroe County's government that runs the Eco Park. And either, Sue, they can take it, or if they can't take it, they might be able to tell you who can.
Okay. I know right? RG&E was taking them, reclaiming them, and they would give you $30, $50, but that program is gone. I'm looking for alternatives. Thanks.
Thank you, Sue. Good luck with that. Down to our last 90 seconds, and want to thank our guests for sharing their insight this hour. And we're going to try to leave it on an up note here. I got to say, after reading Paul Hawken and seeing interviews, you start dark, but you start to feel excited. Sue Hugh Smith, when I talk to my 6-year-old and his friends, and you actually just let them know what's going on, they have a brightness to them. And they say, well, we'll solve it. Now, we don't want to wait till they are adults to solve it. But I feel optimism when I talk to younger people about this. I don't know how you feel.
Well, it depends on the day.
I know. You said you're not an optimist. I'm trying to change
it. Yeah. You keep working on it. But, you know, what makes me feel positively is taking action every day. And whether that's personal action or collective action, I'm doing it all. That's the only way we're going to win, is to not give up. And the joy, the true joy, is the journey and the people that I get to interact with every single day on this journey. They are incredible, and it really restores your feeling about humanity. Really, there's Rochester is just a fabulous, fabulous place. I'm so grateful we moved here. And although since we moved here, I've been very engaged on climate, and that is a bittersweet, but...
20 seconds, Al. You don't teach anymore. Are you inspired by anything?
I don't, but I teach constantly in the presentations and things that I do. And I've got to say that what has to come from the heart, not just the head, the engagement with climate solutions must be felt deeply in the heart. And it's the engagement involvement with people.
And Sue Starpoli has been telling us about what's going on tonight. So it's tonight, 7 p.m. it starts, right?
Yep.
At Metro Justice. This is a New York drawdown event. So we've been talking about these solutions. If you want to learn more, get involved, it's at Metro Justice at 1115 East Main Street. See you there tonight. Thanks for being here this hour.
And I just want to end with Paul Hawkins' words. It's game on, not game over.
Game on and not game over. It better be. Mm-hmm. Our thanks to Sue Starpoli, Sue Hugh Smith, Al Hibner, for representing these various coalitions and Citizens Climate Lobby and all of these grassroots organizations. Thanks to you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Evan.
Thank you.
Short break. More connections coming up.